Welcome to the 469th episode of the Jamie Delaney Plant-Based Wellness Podcast. My name is Jamie Delaney, and I'm your host. I'm a plant-based cardiologist and endurance athlete living in Southwest Florida. Welcome, and thank you for listening. I have the pleasure of having a guest tonight. Her name is Susan Donnelly. I learned about Susan listening to another running podcast and was blown away by her running accomplishments. Susan ran track in high school back in the 80s and was told by her coach, don't bother trying to run when you're in college because you're not fast enough. That didn't seem to bother her. She went on about her college career, getting a degree in engineering, which in the late 80s was very unusual for women. So she was an outlier in her chosen field. She picked up a magazine and learned about ultras and thought that was for her. And one thing led to another, as she will discuss in the podcast, and in 1999 ran her first 100-mile race at age 36. She has now run over 145 100-mile ultramarathons. You might think it came easy, but it didn't come easy, and she had a lot of did-not-finishes early on, or several, I should say, and she began to study the root cause of why someone might not finish an ultramarathon and started and or became intrigued with the mindset of ultramarathons. Fast forward to today, she's almost 61 years old. She's still running over four 100-mile races a year, and she is coaching others to help them finish, and her website is helping other ultra runners master the art of finishing their races. You may be starting to make the connection why I'm having Susan on the podcast, because as I've talked before, I believe that marathoning in general, has a lot to do with the journey of life and lifestyle changes. She was an early adopter or an outlier and running ultras in her career and in her nutrition. And I believe it has a lot to do with that personality of people willing to make changes when the masses aren't doing it. A lot like plant-based nutrition and a health journey to get off medications and reverse lifestyle diseases. So I hope you make the connection. We talk a lot about them. It was a wonderful interview. I am pleased to have Susan Donnelly on the podcast. All right. Well, I would like to welcome Susan Donnelly to the podcast today. I heard you on another podcast and became an instant fan. Fan because you have run 100 mile races. And I think there are, to my calculations, about 8 people in the world have done that. So that's pretty astonishing. And you're also in the same age group category as I am. And that's also a small group. So yeah. I'm always looking, you know, when I do ultras, I'm looking, you know, to see how many of us are still hanging on. And so you are not only hanging on, but you're thriving and just actually have evolved into helping other people achieve their goals. And what you do as a coach, and we'll get into that, is kind of like what I do as a cardiologist and nutrition coach of sorts, is we try to get people's mindset focused on the end game. And whether it be an ultra marathon or getting your diabetes or coronary artery disease under control, it's the end game. So welcome.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, it's great. So a little bit about the story. To run 100 milers, you know, people, I have a podcast that has my one and only on it. And, you know, people often say you do it in one day. And when did you start? You know, and I've come to this game somewhat late in life. But you started around 36, so to speak, with the first ultra, but had been running. You ran in high school. So you were an athlete.
Right. Yes. Yeah. I did run in junior high and high school. And I ran, if you want to count it, I ran around the neighborhood as a kid, played in the woods. So little did I know it, but my childhood prepared me for running 100-mile races in the woods.
That's very good. Yes. I started out as a golfer and a band person, which did not, other than that I walked the golf course, that might help a little bit on a hill or two, but for the most part, it didn't really prepare me for much. But a terrible family history of cardiovascular disease did prepare me to try to stay healthy, and exercise is part of that. And running became a quick way to do that with a daughter. I could run while she was in some sort of practice and run around the soccer field, run around the whatever. We did a lot of things together with running. So, we have that together. So did you run some marathons first, or you just went straight to the woods?
I did, good guess. I did marathons. So I graduated college, for reference, back in 1986, back in the Stone Age, and pre-internet for anybody listening. When I was in college, I just happened to pick up a magazine at the newsstand. We were no internet. We were all about magazines. So I picked up a magazine, and it was about trail running, which I had no idea existed. And then it had a photo in there of a woman running a 100-mile race. So my triply blown by trail running is a thing you can do. 100-mile races are a thing you can do. And women do these things. And I thought, it was one of those moments where, you know, that is what I'm supposed to do. And I had a lot of diversions getting there. I graduated high school graduated college, and I got a job, did the things you're supposed to do, some of the things you're supposed to do in life, and set about living the life you're supposed to live. And then I thought, this is kind of, you know, and I was running marathons, which was, you know, the running you're supposed to do if you're a real runner. I thought, this is kind of boring. And I remembered that article, and I thought, it's time to like live the life I think I really want to live, not the one I should live. And so I trained for a 50-mile race, and I ended up having appendicitis and getting that taken out. And then I thought, I can just pick up my training, as we do, and I can run another one. And I ended up having some scar tissue tear inside a couple months later. And I thought, well, you know, we'll put that ultra marathon thing on the shelf for a while, for later. And then I actually moved back to the town I grew up in, for a guy, long story, but I ran into somebody who was running ultra marathons, of all crazy things. And I said, that was my dream. Let me run with you. And so I had like a group of about 10 friends in that town. And that's how I got started actually running ultras. It took about 10 years from reading it about it to actually doing it.
Once you started, you didn't stop. You were, you know, so if you, you know, like I said, I did some rough math, 36, now 61 and 100, that's plus 100 plus. You went over that in, I forget what year, it was a while ago. Yeah. And you're still doing about 4 a year.
Yeah, I got one coming up. And actually, I only did 4 last year. I've been injured, been dealing with a hip injury. And I think, knock on wood, I've got that figured out. And I've got one coming up mid-April, so very shortly.
Very good. Very good. Cheering you on. But you also diverged a little bit into coaching other people, and not so much do 3 miles, 4 miles, 26 miles, but how do you get your head around this? Because life and ultramarathons have one thing in common. It's they're mostly a head game.
Absolutely.
Or a lot of a head game.
Yes. Yeah. And as the saying goes, 80% head game. Yeah, absolutely.
So, you know, I mean, I read one of your blog posts, and your title is basically master, you know, one of your elevator speech, I would say, is master the art of finishing a race, an ultra race. Yeah. And you had a post that talked about your real versus your pretend belief. Do you believe it right now? There was a little bit of a reference to fake it till you make it, but not really so much as this is how you do it. This is the goal that can, the constant, consistent effort to get to a goal. And your willingness to adjust as you're achieving those goals. And then your story. And I talk a lot about on the podcast about your story. I've always had trouble with my weight. I've always, I have a bad family history. I've yo-yo dieted all my life. These are stories that I hear. Nothing has ever worked for me. The one that, came out with lately was, my weight has always been a fight. So a negative spin on, trying to get to a positive goal. And that hit me when you and I talked a little bit, or when I heard you on the podcast. It's like, this is a pretty similar insight.
Yeah. Yeah. I hear a certain set of stories also. I'm slow is the most common one I hear. I am slow, not I was slow in that race. I am slow. Like it's a quality, just like inherently. I don't belong. I'm not a real ultra runner. I'm a back of the packer, which carries a whole bunch of stuff with it. A lot of the same things. And there's a lot of overlap with body image too. You know, I don't have the body of a quote unquote typical body of an ultra runner, which is, there is no such thing.
Right. I mean, all you gotta do is show up at one and you can see every body habit is that you want.
Yeah. Yeah.
In front and behind you.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And finishing and not finishing.
And finishing.
Yes.
So what do you think you obviously love this, the ultra running, and what do you think the key is to some of your longevity? A lot of people say, well, I always get your knees are going to go. They haven't gone yet. But different things, but you still love it. A lot of people, one and done or bucket list or, but this has been a passion of yours. What drives you to keep signing up for races and, hang your Nikes up?
Good question. Because I get a lot of potential clients grappling with this question. Like they remember loving it. They might not love it right now. They're a little burnout maybe. And they really want to be doing this in some way, shape or form for years, but not the way they're approaching it right now. And actually my tagline is helping you finish, master finishing ultra marathons and still loving it.
And so
So one of the most basic things is to really make sure you just return to your values, figure out what values you, and I know everybody's eyes kind of glaze over like, oh, values, but really return to your values, figure out like your top three values you want to carry into that and make your ultra running, build it around that, because your ultra running can look any way you want it to look. And so the way I have done this so long is because I started before the kind of the culture of celebrity and the culture of perfection that's there now. So when I really started it, I started it because I love adventure. That's one of my values. And to me, every race is still like, ooh, I get to get out of, predictable, ordinary, everyday life where you pay bills and I get to go have an adventure. And to me, like if we're talking about a 100-mile race, the first 50 miles are kind of the, I got to get those done so that I can have the adventure. The second 50 miles are the adventure. For me, it's like, oh, good. Now the race starts for me. Now this is like the jelly inside the jelly donut for me, or the center of the Oreo or whatever. Like this is what I did the first 50 miles to have as the second 50-mile adventure. Let's see how it goes. And so just like an approaching it with curiosity instead of perfectionism, not letting, being very much in my own lane. I'm doing my own thing, my own race. I've decided how I'm going to race this, what I want my race to look like, given all the circumstances I'm bringing to it. And everybody else can do their own thing and we're all doing our own thing together. But I don't have to compare myself to anybody else. So it's a lot of those things that I started with I still carry on. And I find that now that I've been doing this for what, how many years, 20 some years, ultra running. And the mindset I started with is kind of unusual now because we bring so much perfection in. And some of what I coach on, I've seen so many commonalities in women versus my male clients. And it was just noticeable to me. And one of my coaching friends is a feminist coach. And so I went through her program last year to learn how to do feminist life coaching. And so a lot of the stuff, we carry a lot of social conditioning into ultra running, like the need to be perfect, that interferes with our joy of doing it. So that's a lot of what I coach on too.
It was a great synopsis of adopting a healthy lifestyle. One thing that we didn't touch, I believe you're an engineer by day job trade, or for your primary occupation was. So as a woman in the 80s, graduating 1986, you were already an outlier.
Yes, very much.
So you were okay being an outlier. You had good training of being an outlier.
Yeah.
You started a race that there weren't that many women in. Mm-hmm. You didn't care what anybody thought. Mm-mm. And you were running, and you're running your own race, and you're still running your own race.
Yes.
So you danced to the beat of your own drummer, so to speak.
Very well put. Thank you.
And, that is the very thing that makes it so hard for people to transition to, or what we hear, plant-based lifestyle. And we haven't gone into nutrition, but, and I don't know, we'll talk a little bit about how that evolved maybe, or if it didn't evolve, it's just always been, but, I was not always vegan or plant-based. It's something that I read a book called Diet for New America by John Robbins. You know, he talked about the environment and health. And I had no idea, even as a cardiologist, when somebody said eat healthy, that was, you know, don't eat McDonald's, eat a small portion of meat, eat your vegetables, eat a starch, call it a day. But, you know, I ate everything that everybody else ate. And this was just mind blowing to me about, you know, your nutrition could actually change the course of your health. And I was right on. I was right, ready to adopt. I finished the book, went out into the living room, told, you know, my family, we're all vegan now, you know, and they laughed and they said, you're vegan. We're not. But I was ready to be on. I just, you know, drew a line in the sand. I knew that's what I wanted to do, and I'm okay. And again, I was always grew up as an outlier, only child, told I could do anything I wanted to do, played baseball, did tap dancing, went to medical school when there weren't very many women in that. So I was okay being an outlier.
Yeah.
But for people that aren't okay, and especially women that, again, like you say, need to fit in, need to take care of their family, to be all of a sudden to be an outlier can be very difficult. Mm-hmm. It's hard for a lot of people to go ahead and to do their own thing. And it becomes, well, I can't because, you know, so-and-so won't do it, or nobody will ask me to dinner, which is kind of a common thing. people don't want to talk to you because you're, and it's worse, I think. Do people shy away from you because you're an ultra runner?
No, not really, because I probably don't make as big a deal out of it as people expect. So when people hear, like, I've actually done 145 100-mile races, finishes more than most people. And it depends, everybody's counting a little bit different, but more than most people on the planet. And people don't expect that. They look at me like, you, like, because I don't make such a big, I don't walk around with a name tag. I've done this. So people don't, I think people are more curious. And like, to your point, I think when there's like a group meal or a group thing, it's more of a like, oh, what do we do with Susan? Like, what do we, like, how do we handle her? And sometimes they'll be hesitant to ask, you know, what do you eat? What can we get you? What, you know, how do you want to do it? So it's almost more of like my diet than ultra runners, being an ultra runner.
And to go down that road, did you always eat this way, or is that something you involved? You grew up in Tennessee, so I would say that there weren't that many veganish people there.
No, good guess. Although the town I grew up in is, there are three federal government facilities. So growing up, it was like a little island in Tennessee of culture, because we had scientists from all over the world here. At one point, we had the highest percentage of engineers and PhDs in the country.
Wow.
And it was an awesome place to grow up, because we had culture, we had a lot of different thinking, a lot of different foods, a lot of people who are willing to be different, to your point. So the way I got to be how I am on diet was that I grew up in a time when we still ate, you know, meat, potatoes, a vegetable. That was just kind of it. And I still kid my mom about, like, there was like a default meal that she made, like when she was rushed or we didn't have time, which was like, I remember it as chopped up hot dogs and a can of corn mixed up together. And I still tease her about that. And she pretends she doesn't remember it. But when I was in college in like 1980s, I was working at a hot dog hamburger stand, and this was before I was ultra running. And before I took a couple years off in college, because my coach in high school told me not to bother trying out for the college running team because I was not good enough. So I believed him and I took a couple years off in college. That's another story. But, so I wasn't running, and I was working at a hot dog hamburger stand in a small town in South Carolina. And one day I remember clearly, vividly, it's like your experience. I walked outside to stand in the sunshine for a minute. And I just remember thinking, I feel like one of those hamburgers on the griddle in there. I feel so greasy, bad, and heavy and icky. And I thought, that's it. That's it. Done. No red meat. Done. And then it was just a progression. I just realized I wasn't eating chicken or turkey, so I thought, I might as well cross those off the list. And then I had taken a bunch of environmental engineering classes in college, and I thought, you know, I kind of know what's going on in the ocean, and maybe I don't want to eat, you know, scallops anymore, the bottom feeders where everything settles, and maybe I don't want to eat shrimp either. So I thought, well, I'll experiment. I'll try. And giving those up was pretty easy. Dairy was, I thought it was going to be really hard at the time because there weren't really any options. And it was actually pretty easy because there's a world of food out there without dairy. And it was like you, I read a book and it's like, well, really, why am I drinking cow's milk that's meant for baby cows? Like, that doesn't make sense. So that's how I got here. I still eat eggs, but that's how I got where I am. And I probably missed a point that, like, I grew up, I could see growing up early on, it was very clear to me that health was important. If I wanted to do the things I wanted to do in life and have the kind of life I wanted, I just knew health was behind all of it. So that's how I got where I am.
Well, it's to your credit, a lot of physicians don't realize that health has anything to do with, or nutrition has anything to do with health. So, or does running, you know, it's the pharmaceutical industry has infiltrated my profession to the point where it's like, we'll just, don't worry about it. We'll just fix it. With a medication. And so it was, you know, it's been, I've had to relearn my profession, over the past, you know, because when I started seeing people get better all of a sudden eating, healthy, it became a real eye opener that, we were really missing the boat. But it has been, you know, it is probably one of the hardest things to do, to be an outlier if you're not usually that person.
Right.
You know, and if you're in a situation or a group setting that you've not been used to being, then I think that's the hardest transition for people, is they just want to be, it's okay, I'll do what you're doing. I don't want to make waves. I don't want to be that person at the dinner table that, you know, causes everybody's food to be sent back six times. You know, that kind of thing. And so it makes it difficult. What do you think about the running community as far as, you know, it seems like a lot of people, and that adds to it. I'm going to, you know, I have people come here that say, you know, well, I can't lose weight because I'm not exercising. And I kind of grin, and it's like, you mean you're walking 2 miles three times a week and it's not working? I don't understand, you know. And I always laughed. Well, during the 100 miler, I lost a pound. And that was after a couple of days, you know, I did lose a pound. I was like, okay, so I ran 100 miles, took me 31 hours, and I said, I lost a pound. And I said, because I ate the whole time for the most part.
Right. Yeah.
And so it's not the way to lose weight. You know, it's right. you cannot run this off. Proper nutrition, I mean, it will help you maintain it. Does a world of other things. That, you know, movement is so important, but that's not necessarily the key. But I do think that a lot of people, and there are a lot of ultra runners that have eating disorders.
Absolutely.
Or there are people that just are able to maintain. I look at people that are running the ultra community and they're surviving because they're burning through so many calories. But it's like, how good could you be at 35 if you were eating halfway decent? You might not be on the side of the hillside throwing up every half hour. How good, you know, and then how are you going to, you know, it may not catch up with you at 60 like it would have, but it's probably going to catch up at an age that you really don't want it to. So what do you see people evolving and eating better, or do you think it's, you know, it becomes, you know, I mean, because ultras talked about as being a, you know, a picnic where you run some, you know, or, you know, or you run from aid station to aid station, and it's a license to eat, you know, whatever. Do you think, you know, I mean, you obviously know a lot of people, do you think that filters over into their day life or not so much?
I think, in the ultra community, there's a lot of different pockets, a couple of different things going on right now. I mean, there's still the runners who, like, you know, we ran so we can go, let's drink some beer, you know, and all of that, the classic thing. And there are a bunch of, like you said, a bunch of ultra runners there. We can certainly, because we're running an excessive looking number of miles, we're running an extreme number of miles, it can be a place where people with extreme habits, extreme beliefs about themselves and their health can land. Eating disorders are there, just like there are in the regular running community, you know, the below ultra running community. But I do see, like, when I started out, we ate to run, and then there was like a, you know, well, we ran these miles so we can afford a beer and pizza now. But I don't remember it being really like so excessive. And maybe that was because I was in my 30s. I see now, when I went to do my first 200 miler, a friend said, it's like a moving picnic. And I thought, well, okay, maybe not. We'll see. But I ate a ton in the 200s, but I needed to. I was like, and it probably, I didn't weigh myself before and after. It probably evened out pretty much like you said for 100. But what I see going on right now is a lot of, like you said, we'll fix it with a med. A lot of looking for silver bullet type stuff, like there's got to be a nutritional way to do things that's right. And I need to find that right thing, and that will give me good running results. So it's not so much health as a, like, looking for the right nutritional path to good running results. I see a lot of that. I see a lot of, like, I was on that podcast the other day and we were talking about, you know, electrolytes. You know, there are so many electrolyte formulations on the market. And I just saw another one that's like your daily electrolyte formula. Like, I don't remember having a problem with my electrolytes until now. Do I like, do I have a question with my, a problem with my electrolytes now? It, so it's like, are we creating problems that we can market to? So there's a lot of that silver bullet thinking, but I'm not sure that the, in my community, that the way, the reason we're trying to solve the nutrition problem is for health as much as for performance. And so it's a slight wrinkle on it.
Yeah. I think, you know, like, again, during the race, you have to get in fuel any way you can.
Yeah.
And, you know, we're talking, you know, and I always talk about the difference between energy and nutrition. When you're running, you need energy. We're not looking to cure cancer during the run. Yeah. You know, so carbon's carbon. Any way you can get a carbon inside your cell, it's going to work. So whatever kind of carbon you want,
yeah,
you know, you can keep in, then that's really the goal. But I look to some of the people that may not be quite as healthy and say, okay, but after the race or between races, this would make more sense, you know, to try to get this. And I have been very excited. I told you I volunteered up on Hope Pass and, you know, and, when people were coming through, there were quite a bit of plant-based runners coming through, a couple of people volunteering. Mm-hmm. We're getting ready to do the Cruel Jewel in May. That's, they have the people that the race directors, I believe, are plant-based. So they have, you know, several plant-based options. So it's becoming, you know, more of a, people are more of aware and more people that are doing, and not that you, you know, I'm not even going to say you have to be plant-based, but not all junk food-based, I should say, between,
yeah,
between that, you know, because I think that eventually it does catch up with you. But it is funny. I heard you on the other podcast and you were talking about, you know, when you started, you know, there wasn't a gel, you know, you ate what you could get a hold of and, you know, and so it's not that big a deal for you to have, whatever in your pocket now, because you're used to eating wherever you can forage food, that'll work.
Yeah, at the aid station. It was pretty much PB&J. And I remember being absolutely, PB&J was like the food. Everything else was kind of a bowl of stuff. And I remember being, when I started being like totally delighted that there was a bowl of M&Ms. Like I could eat that without you know, bothering my conscience. And then, I quickly realized that, well, this is like a communal bowl of M&Ms. And maybe I'd get my hands in there and eat out of that. And then I started like, you know, okay, you don't eat like that regularly every day. So why are you doing that? It seemed like I had a pass in the race. And then I realized, oh, that doesn't really work that well for me. And I will say there are a lot of people that, that now there are more people in my, in the relative running community who are conscious, you know, like I said, they're really looking for performance, but there are a lot that are also, at the same time, like just wanting to feel better all the time. So there are, it's not totally looking at performance. People want to feel better all the time. But yeah, when I started, it was PB&J squares and jelly beans and M&Ms and maybe a box of donuts from the grocery store. And yeah, it all seemed great and wonderful and it fueled us. But I went back to, you know, my regular diet at the end of a race. So it's like, that is not, that will get me through a race, but it's not sustainable every day. And it's not really how I want to eat. I'm not going to feel good. I know. So it's like, oh, that was fun. That was a fun recess on my diet. And, now I'm back to real life. And now you're right. There are so many plant-based options at races. There are some races that like, started to that I run regularly every year that started to cater to me. Like, oh, we brought some vegan cheese for you. Like, would you like a grilled cheese sandwich? Like, I don't really have the time, but yes, since you brought it for me, hang out and I'll wait for my grilled cheese sandwich. And so now it's almost, there are so many plant-based runners. It's almost like, it's almost a get, it's not a surprise to find vegan options. And we're not talking like, you know, jelly beans at aid station. So healthier options like, you know, avocado and whatever quesadilla, avocado and hummus quesadilla, mm-hmm. for example. So yeah, food has come a long way in races.
And your recovery is good. Quick to just as it was.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
As you can tell, I mean, you have back to back things. I mean, in month turnaround, it's quite amazing.
Yeah. One of the most fun things I did was, this has been within the last 10 years in my 50s. I did I had the opening of my schedule. It was easy travel. So I did 300s in a row, successive weekends. And I remember being the most surprising thing for most people is that I got done with the third one and I was like, oh man, why didn't I sign up for a fourth one? Like, I got in a groove and it was like, I want another one. So, if you pay attention, and part of the recovery is nutrition, you know, taking care of yourself, hydrating and making sure you're eating, enough protein and enough getting in the right foods. You can't eat a bunch of junk that's not going to sit well with you and recover well.
Perfect. And your coaching, what you're doing now besides your engineering, tell us about, what that entails.
Yeah, I actually turned in my resignation, my retirement notice for my engineering job yesterday morning. So I'm going to be switching over to coaching full time. And so I coach the mindset and strategy side, I'm not giving runners a nutrition plan, or I'm not giving them a training plan for like, this is what you need to run in the week. I'm giving them, we're working through giving them mindset skills and teaching them how to plan a race strategy, how to manage the things that they encounter along the way, like lows and things like that. How to deal with those things and just how to deal with negative thinking, all kinds of just mindset and strategy things to prepare them so they can get comfortable risking going for big races and, putting themselves out there, maybe, risking failing at them, but doing the things that they really want to do instead of holding back.
And again, to put that in a nutrition type perspective, the failures are, if they can be seen as learning experiences and an evolution to the greater good, is fine. It's not a reason to stop. I have people that, sometimes want to run away from it because these are things that worked. It's noticing what works, keeping those, and I guess a game of cards when you keep what works and throw away the rest, and then get a couple new cards and see if they work.
Yeah, exactly. And I do help clients. Like, I don't totally shy away from nutrition and training, but on those subjects, I help them figure out what they want. And part of that is, like, on nutrition, is figuring out, like, let's keep track of what's going on and how that, what you're doing, what you're eating leading up to a race. If this is important to you, let's keep track of what you're eating leading up to a race. Let's keep track of what you're eating in it. See what worked, what didn't work, and what you want to do differently next time. There is no such thing as fail. I mean, it is, people say this all the time, but it really is true that there's no such thing as a failure. There's just learning. You're just learning what works and what doesn't work so that you can do it better next time. And you have to learn some of what doesn't work so you know what does work in diet and in training and in everything else.
Well, yeah, I guess bottom line is that if you can not shy away from not looking at it.
Right. Yeah.
I mean, that really is it. If you can not shy away from not looking at what doesn't work for a second. We tell people a lot that, when they come in and they want to give me the right answers. They want to answer the questions right and tell me, I would say I have 100% what you have for dinner last night starts with salad.
Right.
And it's like, what else? Ye 30 minutes later, we get down to what may be causing the indigestion and the other things, but it's, but everybody wants to get all the questions right. And I think as we get older, it becomes, I guess the stigmata and whatever, you don't have time to fail. I got to get this right now. And it, you know, you have to give it a minute. And, you know, nobody's perfect. Everybody, you know, I say everybody's struggling. You know, I haven't met anybody in here that's not struggling. You wouldn't be in here if you weren't struggling. And that's probably what I love about my job. And that's what I actually have come to find out that I love about the ultra running. It's a big giant puzzle.
Yes, it is.
That you're trying to figure out not only the, you know, the training strategy, but you know, what happens on race day and how to get through it. So we'll be working together in the future, and I'm so excited to learn. I'll learn more, and you know, then I'll use what I learned to apply to other people as well as myself. And I just think that's the beauty of all of this, that we're in a giant community that can grow more.
Yeah. And to your point there, I start clients out telling them, don't bring me the right answers. We don't want that. I know what the right answers are. You know what the right answers are. I'm not going to help you if you bring me the right answers. You got to tell me what you're thinking, honestly. And we've got to like look at that so that we can deal with that. That's what we want, is your actual answers. And we are all human. None of us are like perfect here. We are all human. We make mistakes. We fail. That's how we learn. Sometimes it's just good to be reminded that nobody expects you to be perfect. You're human.
Well, I look forward to working with you in the future, and maybe we'll end up doing a podcast, and you know, you can we can talk about all my failures here that are upcoming and how we're learning from them.
All the risks you're being courageous
all
enough.
All the risks I'm taking, and all the, you know, all you've had to deal with over the next several months, and still yet. You'll be looking for an engineering job soon.
Oh, yeah.
Well, it was an honor and pleasure to speak with you. And thank you very much for your time. I'm just, you know, again, amazed and so happy that, you know, I can, you know, that I know if everything else fails, that you're going to be out there running those 4 or 5 or 10 ultras every year.
Yeah, that's the plan. That is definitely the plan.
That is the plan. Good. Well, thanks and have a great evening.
Thank you. It's been a delight.
I hope you enjoyed the interview with Susan, learned a lot, maybe apply them to your own journey, whether it's a health journey, a running journey. If you want Susan to be your ultra running coach, I'll put a link in the show notes so that you can get in touch with her. She also put a link, it's also on her website. She writes a very good mindset blog, so you should all check that out. If you have questions about our practice, go on over to drdelaney.com, drdulaney. Check things out. There are multiple ways you can become a member of our practice that Addie, our registered dietitian, and myself can help you on a monthly basis or full time, whatever you decide. If you just want access to our content, that's also available. So check all those things out. Thank you again for taking time to listen to our podcast. See you next week.